theharleyandwhoone.co.uk present the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast, episode 327. I'm Adam, and well, I should need a lot of equipment, you know, and here's Kirby Butler Sloan.
But do you think that for once in your life you could manage to arrive before the nick of time?
And Andy Nunny.
Here you go, Governor, it's all yours.
Now what gets me, and you might not, hello everyone by the way, is that Rhys Parson has now joined the viewership of this particular Facebook cast, and can't be on the show. I don't understand this.
Well, maybe if we shame him enough, he'll decide to.
Yeah. Shame him? No, he'll run away if we shame him. We just want him on the show. Just don't we miss Rhys, everyone?
Yes, we do, yes.
Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. But
I'm trying to open up the DVD. What is going on here?
You got a rubbish computer?
Probably. I'm beginning to have my doubts about this particular computer.
You're beginning to have doubts about it. Right, so we're going to be looking today at the mind of evil.
In other words, we're looking at your mind.
Anyway, right, so it begins with...
I haven't been able to open the DVD yet.
So I've got to wait for you, have I?
Yes.
Well, put your thumbs in. If you do it very carefully, I'm sure you'll get that box to open up.
I suppose we could always play a... what have we got here? I can play a little... bide the time while Kirby sorts his computer out again.
And again, and again, and again.
You ever going to write another book, Adam, by the way?
No. Why do you ask me that? Okay. That's a very random question.
Well, no, cause I was just thinking that quite often you used to play the adverts for your books, things like that.
Yeah, I did.
So I was just wondering...
Almost there. Almost there.
Hello, I'm Colin Baker. You lucky people are listening to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, the best podcast on the pod.
Shame he doesn't remember it.
Anyway.
Oh, talk about Rhys. I got this one.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you are listening to Who is the Man podcast.
That was a special bumper done for Rhys's show. And Rhys says, hello all. Can I most likely... What does that mean? Can I most likely? And then Billy Kirkbright says, Mr. Butcher.
I've got the DVD.
Is going. Are you running now, are you? I'm just filling in while you've got it running. I think Alan T. Butcher has indeed joined the show, the listenership, all three of them. Which, more than we normally have on a Monday morning. Last week we had none, or last time we recorded on a Monday. We had none. Right, going back to Mind of Evil, Rhys says, commit
You're
to recording the Christmas
Mind of Evil.
Review. What does that mean? He's said that sentence in two halves, and I don't know what he means by it. Does that mean he can commit... Oh, he can't confirm anything. He can't confirm anything.
Oh, do the Christmas review, so that'll be... So we're going to do what, Boxing Day evening?
Wife permitting. That would be nice. I can't be guarantee it, but wife permitting. Billy Kirkbright says... Got a cup of tea, curry, Andy, by all. Oh, not very long, was it? Yeah. Keep us on, just take us into your kitchen and watch, listen, while
that's
you're
right.
cooking the tea. Yes. That's the benefit of mobile devices. Right, the mind of evil.
Okay.
Pardon?
I said, okay, I've got Dover Castle on the screen.
Yeah, okay.
Have either of you visited Dover Castle?
I have been to Dover Castle.
Grief.
Yeah, we went there. Oh, blimey.
And did you recreate any scenes from this particular story?
I can't remember. We did go down into the tunnels underneath, because there's the tunnels for the Second World War, and there's Napoleonic tunnels as well, and they're supposed to be haunted.
I haven't even started it yet. right, so that we start with the Doctor and Joe arriving in Bessie in Stanmore prison, because they've come to investigate some machine which is supposed to extract evil thoughts and stuff from the prisoners. A perfect way of dealing with prisoners, if indeed it could happen without creating a mind of evil type thing. If they could actually do this in real life and not have any of this kerfuffle, that'd be quite useful, wouldn't it, everybody? although maybe not very humane, but never mind.
By the way, Billy Kirkwright is the only one of the 450 members who's called Billy.
Okay, thank you for that.
That was random.
No, because we just wondered if there was a beginning. We said Billy's watching. I did wonder if it was Billy Kirkbride, and Adam reckoned that's the only Billy on our membership in years.
Yes, thank you for that. The comments coming through so fast, I can't read them. Billy Kirkbride says, "Hi, Billy. A brief visit from me to make sure it all is well. I put my feedback in good time, I should say. That usually means the podcast recording gets cancelled. Usually, I'm sure that's a slight exaggeration. So basically, the people, two of our listen watchers, won't be listening or watching in a moment. Back to Doctor Who. So they're demonstrating this machine, like I say, and they get Barnum in to, because he's quite a monster apparently, to demonstrate how it works. The Doctor is sitting.
He's very distinctive looking, isn't he?
Yes, he is. Why?
It's called acromegaly.
What? What are you on about?
The disease that he has that causes his facial deformity is acromegaly.
Okay, if you say so. Anyway, so the Doctor.
So he was in a lot of stuff because of his kind of unusual looks.
Thank you. So the Doctor.
Did he do Carry On films, I think, from memory?
I don't know.
I'm looking. Let's see. No, I don't see any Carry On films. He was in Time Bandits, Clash of the Titans.
Right, can I move on now?
Yes, of course.
Right. So the Doctor and Joe are watching this treatment, and the Doctor keeps heckling the bloke who's.
Oh, he's going to be in Power of Kroll when we get around to it. Which I've never seen.
Like, so they activate the machine and it doesn't perform quite how they expected it to, and Barnum passes out, but he's not dead, he's just passed out.
He's getting better.
But as they go out of the room, the machine reactivates itself and kills somebody, doesn't it? I can't remember who it kills now, some bloke. And Doctor, obviously, he doesn't like it straight away. He sort of protests straight away. And then we switch over to the Brigadier's office where we meet, is it Chin Lee, the Chinese delegate?
Chin Lee,
Chinese
captain, yeah.
With a very strange hairdo. And
the actress was married to the writer.
Was she?
Yes.
Ah, and she was also in the second of the, what's that, Rowan Atkinson?
Blackadder?
No, the film.
The spy one.
Yeah, what's it called again?
Johnny English.
Johnny English, the second Johnny English.
I thought she was in the first one.
No, I don't think she was in the first one. I remember her being in the second one and doing lots of...
Where she plays a murderous
martial arts person. Group. Yeah, she keeps on popping up, a bit like
it's Kato. The second one. Johnny English in Reborn.
I said it was the second one. Good grief.
Well, I'm confirming that you're correct.
Well, you don't have to, because I'm always right. So anyway...
Yes, you have a mind of evil.
She's obviously got her... She plays possessed quite well. And she has some...
I dislike that she was forced in these days to use such a stereotypical accent. She spoke perfect English.
Well, she had to come across as actually coming from China. So why would she not be given some sort of accent?
Some sort of accent is fine, but stereotypical is sing-song is what it is, okay. Which is not how someone who has learned English who speaks Chinese or variety.
Would it not have been difficult for her, being that she was British, to know, you know, precisely the right accent to use under those circumstances?
It's because of the time this was made.
Okay, so you say you reckon she could have done the correct Chinese accent?
English. Correct.
You reckon? Okay, fair enough. But you're right. Obviously, this time.
Need I remind you that I am sensitive to these sorts of things because of my daughters?
Yes, but I would say that
who have normal American accents.
Normal American accents.
They were no such thing as a normal American accent. Is there? They're all, you know, you've got regional accents, haven't you?
Exactly.
But they don't have southern accents.
I know people from London seem to have some sort of Caribbean twang to their accent, which irritates me greatly. All the chavs and the, you know, they, have you noticed that, Andy?
Yes.
Yeah, it's very irritating. Whatever happened to the proper London
anyway,
accent?
Anyway, back to the.
You're the one who deviated. Episode. Anyway, so we meet.
That's my job. We meet Michael Sheard.
Yeah, Dr.
Yes.
Mr.
Bronson.
Again.
Yeah.
This is how many times
he lived on the Isle of Wight.
So far.
I'm just saying.
I think he's in five or six stories overall.
He lived on the Isle of Wight, you know.
Oh, cool.
So yes.
Okay, he was. Okay, this is his second appearance. His first time was in the Ark.
Yeah, I know.
I'm just letting people know.
Thank you. Anyway, there's a bit of trouble going on at the embassy because people are dying and stuff. And obviously, Chinle is being suspected. So the
unit suspected her from the beginning.
Yeah, not very difficult to work that one out. So the unit are watching her closely.
A delegate to come to the Chinese area where he's going to die. It's going to be bloody suspicious, actually. Not really bright, is it? You know, no. To do it that way. You know, why don't you go and kill him in his quarters, and then it wouldn't be so obvious.
Indeed.
Oh, anyway. You've moved on to episode two, huh?
No! I'm on episode one!
Well, no, Andy had moved on to episode two.
Oh, well, anyway, I'm trying to get around
the cliffhanger of episode two.
Yeah, thank you. Anyway, so the bloke who operated the machine drowns in the thing without any water or anything, because he gets hypnotized into...
Which doesn't make sense.
No. Doesn't really make sense.
Because it's giving you your worst fears, but it's only in your mind. Indeed. How did it manifest the water?
Exactly. And why would you have water in your lungs and stuff like that, unless it just generated water through natural...
Well, it is an evil thing, and it's a science fiction TV show, so okay, it makes sense.
If you say so. Right, so they're following Chin Li, and... Barnum is sort of recovering and making friends with Joe, and then the doctor gets stuck in the room with the machine, and it turns itself on and starts attacking the doctor. But fortunately, Joe walks in right at the right moment, and but every time because the doctor sees fire at this stage, fire is obviously a thing that's quite scary. It goes googly-eyed unusually, doesn't he? If you notice that,
Wait, that's not unusual.
I'm being sarcastic,
okay,
Kirby. Anyway, what am I saying? So, Roge rescues the doctor. I mean, Joe rescues the doctor, the doctor's basically saying, "Right, we've got to get rid of this machine somehow." Benton, meanwhile, is trying to follow Chin Li, and he's sort of I noticed that they arrive at an area that reminds me of the Hartnell story, War Machines.
It is Cornwall Gardens. The area. Mm. I was about to say that.
Oh, you were you?
Yes, it's.
You didn't need me to prompt you at all, then.
Cornwall Gardens Walk.
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so Benson gets sort of knocked out by mind power. And Chin Li...
And hangs from the fence in a funny way.
Yeah. And then this telephone engineer bloke is fiddling around with his box. Obviously, he's a bit suspicious, isn't he? And it's quite interesting to see even when he's doing these little adjustments to the box, he is, in fact, wearing a mask. It's not an actor, you know, that they used and then use a different one for... Delgado, that you can see quite clearly it is in fact a mask, even when he's doing all his adjustments. And of course the master takes off his mask, and he can listen in to all the unit conversations and stuff. So
that's also futuristic.
Is it? Why is it futuristic?
Oh, to be able to bug things like that with a little wireless box and everything.
Yeah, if you say so. Right, I'm sorry. I just found the quote I should have used, because it's difficult going for a whole story of six episodes to find an appropriate quote. But the quote I should use was, "This unworthy person welcomes you and delights in your safe arrival."
It is not difficult to find a quote.
A better quote than the one I used.
Six or seven of them. I'm ready with six or seven of them every week, because I watch it, and then I go back through and decide what I'm going to use as a quote. And I also tend to use What's that book? The
Rhys Parton's Book of Excuses.
Okay, fine.
No?
No.
Anyway, so the doctor has a meeting with this chap. I can't remember his name now. The new Chinese delegate. Because I think one of the Chinese delegates is dead. And,
yes. Yes.
He's getting better.
Yeah. So he meets this new Chinese delegate bloke. And you grumbled about the accents. What about his accent then?
It's better.
That's better, right, okay. Now, maybe because he was actually Chinese, perhaps?
So was she.
No, I mean, as in born in China, not British Chinese, Chinese Chinese. Moved to Britain from China as a Chinese person.
Well, she did too. Although
maybe
she
grew up in Britain and has a British accent.
True. She attended convent school in Penang.
Okay.
She's actually born in Malaysia, but she didn't move to the UK until she was 16.
Okay, never mind. What I'm trying to say is,
I don't have any information.
What was refreshing
on him.
About this Sorry. Particular story, because you may criticise the fact that they were doing these stereotypical Chinese accents, was they were actually using ethnic actors instead of
yes.
white actors with made up, you know, with their eyes
like we get later in Talons.
Yeah, yeah, but they also in Talons use some ethnic actors as well.
Yes.
I mean, it was a bit rubbish to, you know, for the main character to be very badly made up to look Chinese or sort of stereotypically Chinese, as you would say. But in this story,
they address that in that story when we get around to that story again.
Okay. But the actors that in the effort they used quite a few ethnic actors in this story, which was quite refreshing.
Yes.
And you know, had quite prominent roles as well. So, but like you say, if she was the writer's wife, you said, then it's not really surprising she managed to get a main role in the story. Right, so.
And Joe, the doctor, when he says Mao Zedong, says it correctly, which is good.
Okay, thank you.
Particularly for that time in history, because people were always saying
Mao Zedong.
Mao Zedong, which is not how it's pronounced.
No. Anyway, right, so when. Did you notice one of the. You probably won't, because you're probably not that familiar with the three doctors, but one of the. Officers.
Of course, I'm familiar with the three doctors.
One of the officers was one of the main Time Lord in the three doctors. You may remember him for later, but he was.
Yes.
Oh, you remembered that? You knew that, did you?
Yeah, I hadn't gotten around to it yet.
You didn't need me to prompt you on that one either, then, Kirby.
Of course not.
Anyway, Mailer gets brought to the prison. He's a bit of a naughty boy, but played very, very well. Very good actor. He used to be he played a policeman, actually, in Cat's Eyes, I seem to remember, with Jill Gascoigne.
I
used to like that series. It was made in the south of England, and Leslie Ash, before she had her lips done, was in it. Yeah, it was a good series, that. So the doctor is very, very friendly with this Chinese delegate bloke. And also Mailer is being looked after by a couple of prison guards, but very quickly gets broken out. And then in episode two, we find that, surprise, surprise, that, what's her name again, this Chinese girl? Chin Li?
Chin Li.
Is in league with the master. And she tries to sort of reject the master's command to kill the American delegate, but he just says, "You will obey me," sort of thing, and off she goes.
She's not exactly in league. I mean, she's sort of been under his control, isn't she?
Yeah, but she's still...
She didn't really have much choice.
She obviously didn't have much choice, but she's still in league with the master, isn't she? Whether she's got choice to do it or not, she's the master's little puppet. Brigadier has a red phone, by the way. So anyway, right, so Jin Li arranges to meet privately with the American delegate. And how's his accent then, Kirby?
Oh, pretty good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah,
right?
which part of America?
Somewhere.
Generic. so he's not suspicious at all to meet this woman, mind you, pretty Chinese woman, hotel room, I suppose he was thinking. if you're thinking.
That's
what
I said, the point I made earlier about the fact, you know, it's not really very sensible to invite him there because you're going to kill him there and they're going to find him.
Yeah, but what would an American delegate, I'm thinking on the lines of Bill Clinton and people like that, think, oh, a pretty Chinese girl has just phoned me to invite me to a room for a private meeting. So what's he going to think?
Well, it's more than she needs dinner, wasn't she?
Well, she said that he was coming to visit the... to have a meeting with the actual ambassador.
Yeah, I know, but
He didn't know that it was just her until he turns around.
Oh,
and
she
starts attacking him with a very fake-looking dragon head.
Yes. Doesn't matter, though. It's for effect, wasn't it? And he dies, doesn't he? Or does he die?
No.
Oh, no. They get... Oh, the doctor and the brigadier turn up just in time. And the brigadier's going to shoot Chin Lee, but the doctor saves her life. The prison stuff, it reminds me of Porridge. I don't know why. I think it's Porridge.
What's
started
Porridge?
After this.
It was a comedy series.
We talked about this before, didn't we?
Peter Bourne was in it. He died the other day.
What I'm saying is we talked about Porridge a couple of weeks ago. I'm getting a deja vu moment here. I'm pretty sure we did.
Probably. Wasn't it the one a couple of weeks ago when I missed it?
Possibly, I can't remember. Because I remember Andy saying exactly the
Porridge?
Same words. It was a comedy series, blah, blah, blah. I remember where it was. It was
Wikipedia.
When we did Silurians, because Fulton MacKay was
in
Porridge. So there you go. So the doctor.
You mean oatmeal? Porridge?
Be quiet. the doctor sort of gets out of Chin Lee.
By the way, they're speaking
the Master's connection.
Hokkien, which is it's not Mandarin.
Okay.
And it is mentioned in dialogue. And the reason they use that language is because that was the native language of the actress who plays Chin Lee, not Mandarin.
Well, that's not,
or Cantonese.
That's okay, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that Hokkien may have been the local dialect where my youngest daughter was from. I'd have to look it up.
Well, that's interesting. But what I'm sort of trying to point out here is that they're being quite educational here. So I don't think a lot of people at this stage would know that there were several languages in China. They would just think there was Chinese was a language.
Right.
I think that's quite educational for people. I did think that the
Porridge is set in a prison. Why didn't you say so?
I think I did.
We did, you donut. We said it just a minute ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. I was quite disappointed in some way, in hindsight, is the doctor didn't mention, because he was name-dropping left, right and centre about all the people he's met. You know, but he did mention the fact that he met Marco Polo,
Marco.
Stuff like that would have been quite useful, little thing to drop in to this particular story. Because obviously moving on a little bit later to Planet of the Daleks, I believe, when he did mention Ian, Barbara and Susan being on Skaro and talking about his previous visit because the Thals remembered or had some sort of tribal memory of the visit of the Doctor. But on this occasion, he decided not to mention that he'd met Marco Polo and already travelled across China in a caravan. So, right, back to this story. The Brigadier is still listening in on these conversations, but very soon...
The Brigadier, you mean the Master?
Yeah, Master,
yeah. Yeah, sorry, I looked at the Brigadier, I said Brigadier, I meant the Master. Just making sure you're paying attention. Yes, the Master's still listening to the Brigadier.
I always pay attention, except when I don't.
And very soon arrives at the prison in his other guise, is it Professor Keller or Dr. Keller or something? I can't remember what it is now.
Yes.
Just
Keller, whatever.
Keller, yeah. And sort of takes over the prison.
You know what I think of...
Hell breaks loose. Yeah?
What I think of with British prison stuff is that goon show that was set at Dartmoor Prison, Tales of Old Dartmoor.
Not familiar entirely with specific goon show episodes, but thanks anyway.
You need to be.
I haven't got time to be.
Never really got into the goons.
I'm sure it's brilliant, but I haven't.
And I'm American.
Yeah, still, we've noticed that one, Kirby. So the Master puts on a gas mask and takes over the prison, and then the Doctor arrives, and they have the scenes that we generally wait for between Pertwee and Delgado is when they get together and have a bit of a chin wag. Always a bit of a highlight episodes that the Doctor and Pertwee and Delgado, Doctor Master.
He was by far and away the best Master, wasn't he, Delgado? Yes. He was just so incredibly urbane and polite. You know, it's the author's story. You know, he's evil and nasty, vicious, but he's politely so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And these are my first real exposures to him, other than seeing Claws of Axos.
Mm. Well, and, they were both polite to each other, though, weren't they? Suave, and so they're a great balance of each other.
And I can see how the Master could possibly be the Doctor's brother.
I'd rather he wasn't, but yeah, I can see where people come from. Anyway, meanwhile, the Master has a plan, and that plan is to point a missile at the peace conference.
It's a real missile.
Yeah, and also kill the Doctor. To a degree, but he puts the Doctor in a room with his arms tied behind his back, the machine obviously switches itself on, and the Doctor gets another little bit of a treatment from the Keller machine. Of course, this time Jo's locked in the cell, so she can't help it, and this time it knocks him out, basically. And what surprised me is the Master comes into the room, obviously tries to turn the machine off, and revives the Doctor.
Exterminate.
I know, whatever. But he revives a Doctor. He had one heart going. He could have just stopped the other heart. Job done. But no.
Yeah, I think he realised he still needed a Doctor around, didn't he?
Why did he still need him? No, okay.
Because that's part of the whole thing about having the TV show have this big rivalry, particularly during this season.
That's really not answering my question, Kirby. But, now, when I looked at this, he does want to kill the Doctor, but then he's got this chance the Doctor's needed. Oh, but if he's dead, I can't have this fun trying to kill him. And that's what I got from that he's brought him back from that. Mm. Yes, and it also comes back to the stuff we've watched more recently with Missy and the Doctor, where, you know, they're frenemies, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think there is a bit of mutual respect in a way, isn't there? They respect each other's abilities.
That they are still friends, even though they're against each other. And you don't know this at the time, but it really does work. So I congratulate Stephen Moffat on bringing that aspect to the relationship of the Doctor and Master / Missy. And it does sort of endear you more to the Master.
Would
as
you
a
call
character.
That a Master stroke?
Anyway, right. Poor when John Pertwee does play these sort of exhausted scenes quite well, as it all is in the same way, when he can't get the sentence out properly. But yeah, he doesn't sort of deviate from that, even when if you look at the last scene of the Third Doctor, which we will watch in a few months' time. Right. So. Yeah, the Master.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I had not realized that we have 5 seasons to go through.
Yeah. This is the second season.
Wow, and we're just in the middle of the second.
Correct.
Yeah, but the shortest seasons since before, aren't they? We're only talking 6 stories each time. Yes. It's not like Trout and Hartnell.
Except they're very long.
Some of the stories are long, but not as long.
Yeah, but they're the short stories, so we'll get through the seasons quite quickly.
Yes. But this is the last of the Journey episodes that we'll be doing until the new year, because obviously next time we'll be looking at the Christmas special. So back to the episode. Yeah, the Master locks the Doctor, or asks his little sort of tough friends to lock the Doctor in. So we did say, look after him. No, don't hurt him or anything. But they give him a good kicking anyway. So he's a bit unconscious for a bit. Joe calls for the other Doctor to come and give him some help and some medicine, and he wakes up just in time to stop her from giving a medicine that would have killed him, or might have killed him, I should say.
Yes.
And then he just says...
And yet other times he's taken human medicine with no issues.
Indeed. Well, this you never know, do you? He might have been allergic to it, you don't know. But so he's just going to have a nap for a bit. He's just going to have a nap for a bit. The Master shows Mailer his plan, that, you know, what they're going to do to nick the missile from UNIT. And so that's basically what they head off to do. He takes his little cronies and they ambush the convoy. Mighty Yates looks like he's just got shot, but because he says ow. But I think his radio
got shot. The convoy? 10-4, good buddy.
Anyway, and Benton
wasn't really much of a convoy, was it?
No, Benton gets a bit of a bang on the head, and looks like he's
like the way he sort of wakes up and knows about, and then probably passes out again. You know,
and also the fact that he's obviously fallen in that position, but the blood's run up his head, and also the fact that he looks like he's trapped underneath a Land Rover, but he isn't. He's just lying underneath one. But never mind.
Normally it's a lay on a Jeep, doesn't it? You've got to lay under a Jeep today.
Yeah, he's having a bit of a nap. That's basically what he's doing. And that was interesting about the female unit officer.
Corporal Bell.
Yeah. She was in a couple of previous stories, I believe. I think she might have been in...
No, this is the first time that she has shown up.
I thought she was in Spearhead from Space. In fact, I thought she was actually in Invasion briefly, but now you've said that, I'm obviously wrong. No, she's going to look it up now.
I think she's cropped up another one.
She's only in next week's story, or the next story. She's in Mind of Evil and Claws of Access. That's the only time she's in.
That surprises me. I thought I'd seen her in one of the earlier stories. Obviously, I've seen her in one of the later ones. But, yeah, Kirby got really excited because it's a real missile, like you say. Yates gets gets taken in by the Master, I believe. And the Keller machine starts dematerializing in a wibbly wobbly way.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's just really awful special effect, isn't it?
And starts sort of killing people now.
It didn't bother me because it's just the way 70s television was.
Yeah, that was all right. It was very obviously unique to the Keller machine for its dematerialization. So now it can transfer itself. The Master, when he finds this out, thinks, hang on, this is not very good. So he enlists the Doctor to try and create a device that keeps it in one place. And then this sort of Major Cosworth turns up sort of randomly out of the blue because he hasn't been in any of the
movies. I know. He was weird.
Obviously based on General Montgomery because he's very much like that.
Didn't see him. The Rickman did a thump at one point.
Did you?
But didn't you think so? You know, is there any questions? No, sir. And he just looked at him and thought, he's going to thump in a minute, isn't he?
I did quite enjoy when Yates had been tied up and he was listening into the Master's conversations and the Master turns around and says, Captain Yates, you can stop pretending to be unconscious now. I thought that was quite funny. He's quite good in this, wasn't he, old friend of the show, Richard Franklin?
Yeah.
Yes.
Very good. Right, so I'm just moving on a little bit here. Yeah, just moving on, because there's a bit of filler while the Master persuaded the Doctor to help him sort out the machine, and if he refused to do so, obviously they're going to kill Joe. It's always going to work, isn't it? So, when the Doctor and Master work together seemingly in every single story in some capacity, this is a bit earlier than normal, almost right at the end when the Master realises that they need to defeat the enemy that he wants to work with. And the interesting part of this, of course, is that when the Doctor's trying to put the coil around the machine, he sees visions of exciting Doctor Who monsters flying past, which... obviously at the time just harking back to the Troughton era, so that's all well and good. But anyway, so he does manage to get the coil around, which disables the monster temporarily, and then he needs another lie down. The Brigadier meanwhile has got dressed up in a jumpsuit and puts on this rather appalling accent.
Yeah.
The whole assault on the castle scene.
It was a good scene.
The boiler suit.
Yeah, it's a boiler suit.
Well, it's a boiler suit. Well, it's a bit like a jumpsuit, a boiler suit, and it's a one piece thing. It's a onesie, basically, isn't it? But anyway, he's delivering to Nosh. But I always thought, he's turned up. He's supposed to be this van driver, but with a military moustache. Well, I thought that would have been quite a thing. That's very unusual for a Cornwall Garden sort of van driver. Anyway, he gets in, and the soldiers are just standing behind the van, which I thought, what the hell is that? Surely he would have seen the legs from underneath or something. But nevertheless, it was quite amusing.
If you watch, there's more soldiers in the van as well.
It's bigger on the inside. It's a TARDIS van, obviously.
It's bigger on the inside, yeah.
But Yeah, of course, it enabled them to havoc to do their little battle scenes that they do in every Doctor Who story at this stage, which is always.
And we had some rope climbing as well, didn't we?
Yes.
Really good.
Yes. Yes, Kirby.
There's a nice scene on the second disc, a nice section, an extra, where they do one of those then and now.
Yeah.
And they lined up a lot of the shots exactly the same to show what Dover Castle looks like. Now,
cool.
Or now when they did this, although they did this DVD fairly recently.
Yeah, there's lots of it's quite a violent scene. A lot of people get done in it and shot and whatever. But some of the death acting is quite amusing. Like there's one bloke gets shot and he dives forward, and they seem to like getting people shot quite high up so they have to fall as well.
Yeah, this DVD's only 3.5 years old.
Is it?
Yeah, it was put out in June 2013.
Okay, thank you for that, Kobe. Therefore, this will be the first time I've watched it. I did notice, actually, watching the DVD, there was a weird sort of glittery effect and a strobing, slightly moray effect running in the background, which looked like, to me, while I was watching it on the HD TV, you know, like the glitter balls you get in disco. Somebody was shining a light on that, and it was just...
I didn't see that, but I'm watching probably on a less... good screen than you have
maybe
but they had to restore episodes 2 to 6 were restored to color via the chroma dot color recovery technique.
Yes.
Okay, so that may be why you're seeing this.
Possibly. Anyway, so the Mailer and Frog marches the Doctor and Joe because they nearly get out of the castle, but they get caught again, and Joe tries to stop or help the Doctor overcome Mailer by sort of falling backwards, but Mailer decides he's going to shoot the Doctor anyway, and the gun fires. Great cliffhanger. That is really, really good cliffhanger, because you think it's the you think it's Mailer's gun. Absolutely brilliant. And I think at the time, you would think, well, how the hell's the Doctor going to get out of that one? Point blank range.
That's what I was thinking.
Great.
This is the first time I've seen this one.
That cliffhanger was probably the best cliffhanger until they brought in the 11th Doctor has to do his first regeneration.
Yes.
Which is still, for me, the best cliffhanger in Doctor Who history. So it's the Brigadier that obviously shoots Mailer dead. He doesn't shoot a lot of people dead, does he? We did in this episode.
There's a lot of dead people in this one. A lot of soldiers and prisoners being shot.
They're getting better.
The investigation for this particular incident must have taken some time.
Yes.
So, right, the Benton is put as acting governor, which is quite amusing because he's quite pleased with it. But he's not very good at looking after Barnum, which is probably just as well because it meant that they could find out that Barnum was the thing that could keep the machine at bay. The missile.
Yes, they're going to sell it on eBay.
The missile is put in its position, ready for launch.
I'm here every week.
Eh?
Yeah, we.
I'm here every week.
But the Keller machine breaks free of its little binds and starts bubbling up because it's getting full now of these evil things, isn't it? So it's starting to overflow.
Yeah. So it's amazing the way that everything went flying around the room as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's strange. You know, when it broke away from its the camera sort of zooming in and out. That cameraman must have been worn out. He'd been running around the room, zooming in and out. But it was actually, it worked really well for that particular scene. So again, the Doctor and Mast have a conversation over the phone, which is quite amusing when they talk to each other. It's always very calm and suave. Barnum, basically, they use him as a means to keep the machine calm while they try and, or the Doctor tries to kill two birds with one stone. And he wants to blow up the missile. Is it to blow up the missile and the machine and the Master all at the same time?
Yes.
But the Master gets away because Barnum he runs by the machine and of course he wants to have it out with the Master, but when he obviously stands by the machine, it calms the machine down. The Master's able to get up and run him over and kill him.
Why did the machine not affect them as they ran because when the three of them ran past the machine, why didn't it affect the Doctor and Joe?
That's a very good question. Now, so Barnum's dead now,
he was busy.
To feed on.
Yeah, and surely they should all be affected.
I agree, didn't think of that at the time. But yes. So the Master sneaks away, basically, and but they've done their job, you know, the machine's broken, whatever, and obviously they know the Master's out and about because he's managed to get his dematerialization circuit back. And he sort of gloats to the Doctor over the phone, and of course about, you know, being in joy or exile, Doctor. And he says, yes, well, I'm stuck yes. with you, Brigadier. The Brigadier sort of takes it on the chin like he normally does.
Well, he just grins at him, doesn't he? Yeah. So,
yeah. You can see the affection in his eyes, really good. Yep. So that's the Mind of Evil. Now, I'm going to tell you one thing about Mind of Evil. It's quite good fun, isn't it? One episode too long for me. Again, because they had to put in all these fight scenes and stuff, which they paid for, and they've employed these Havoc stuff, it does tend to sort of make things drag along a little bit too much. I get that feeling from, I think it was the third of the Lord of the Rings films I fell asleep at, because there was a battle scene that lasted about 3/4 of an hour. Too much fighting can be a little bit boring. Now, by way of contrast, for some reason, I think they got the balance right in Star Trek Beyond, because I didn't find that boring. It was a very action-packed film, lots of fighting, but it balanced out really, really well, and it's a thing of beauty, I think, Star Trek Beyond. Very, very good film. I didn't even know Idris Elba was in it, so it was a big surprise when he turned up. And so I'm just doing a slight review and comparing the two. I know I'm sort of slightly deviated. I just wanted to mention I'd seen Star Trek Beyond. And
Michael, can you help me, please? I'm in the major
And I've got to stop just for a moment. You carry on, you two.
Why are
you...
Kirby, what did you think of it, then? Okay, Kirby, what did you think of it? This is the first time you've ever seen this.
You think I should go ahead while Master's not in the room?
Yeah, look, we did say go ahead. We'll carry on, So this is the first time you've seen it.
Oh, I liked it. I'm really enjoying seeing all these Pertwees for the first time ever. And my opinion of this particular Doctor is increasing. Because I think I'm trying to remember which one I'd seen. I'd only seen like... I don't know. I have to look at the list. But anyway, I've really enjoyed it. It's about one episode too long. Is he back?
Not yet. Let's keep going to it. Let's keep going.
It's about one episode too long, and it could have done without a lot of the unit stuff, just a lot of the organizational stuff of planning all the assaults and stuff. Just get right to the assault of the castle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think I probably watched it when it's first broadcast, because I would have been, 71? I'd have been six. So probably, and I have seen it as well when it was repeated on UK Gold. I think you're right. It's interesting that certainly for the last two episodes, I've got very few notes. In fact, episode six, I've only got one line of notes, and that's about ignoring the machine. So I think there was a lot of it where it just was battle for the sake of battle. It was a lot of planning, and there was a lot of padding there. And I think they were stuck with the six-part stories, so therefore they had to do that. So right, I agree with you there. It probably is at least one episode, possibly two episodes, too long. But it does have a very, very good story, because you've got the parallel stories of the missile and the prison going alongside each other. And actually, you've got some real characters. I mean, the Master obviously is fleshing out more and more into becoming a very, very good adversary for Doctor. They've got the Brig, Gates, and Benton all managed to have good parts, and because the characters are coming through, Joe's certainly progressing, and the prisoners as well, like Mailer and Barnum. They're actually developed as fully fleshed out characters, and even Dr. Summers as well. So that having a longer story does allow for a lot of character development, and you get to understand more about these people and how they all are interacting. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yes.
Okay. What can we talk about now?
Where did Master go? Did we even get any gist of what?
This Debbie wants him help with something, so he sounds like he's gone out of the room. So what else? Yeah, it's interesting. Well, of course, this is one of those that's been colourised. I think was it the there was one colour episode in existence.
Correct.
And then they've colourised
the
five
episode.
Of them. But actually, they have come up very well. I mean, you think even on video, you wouldn't have noticed it. Certainly, when I saw it on UK Gold repeat, it was in black and white, and probably when I saw it first time round, We only had black and white television till 1973, so I wouldn't have seen it in colour then. So this is the first time I've seen a full good colour version. The UK gold one was on cable, and the quality of the picture wasn't brilliant. So obviously they've done a lot of cleaning up around this as well. So it's come up with it. And if you didn't know it was a recolorized story, you wouldn't guess that, would you? Because it's I know some of the recolorized stories were pretty awful. You know, they're so garish in colour. But this one wasn't. This one's been done very subtly, very well.
This one says the color scenes were stored by combining a color signal of the off-air recording. There's a bonus about it. I missed that bonus because it was two discs. But actually, it was 4.5 minutes of color footage existed from episode 6 from an off-air domestic NTSC Betamax recording.
All right.
So somewhere,
I mean, you know, whether they've got the rest of it in colour anywhere, but obviously the black and white would be very sharp. So I can remember when I've seen black and white versions, you know, of the Pertwees, because they actually did keep black and white copies as well when they junked them. For some reason, they also kept black and white, which I don't really understand why. I suppose in those days...
They didn't always keep black and white.
No, I think it went up to... It stopped somewhere during Pertwee. They could... It certainly didn't go as far as Tom Baker. I think probably about 72, 73, they stopped taking black and white copies of the stories as well. Because, you know, colour wasn't that predominant there. I think it's... Well, the first colour broadcast was obviously in 1969, I think it was, in 1970. Because if you look at them, they all say BBC Colour. And there were still programmes being broadcast in black and white those days.
Yes.
So I think probably it's about 72, 73, they stopped taking the black and white copies. Apparently, there still are some people who do have black and white televisions. You still can buy a black and white TV license.
Really?
I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
That surprises me.
I think if you're talking about Topham's Halfpenny or something like that, it really is cheap to have one.
I can't imagine people have still got black and white licenses. I can't even imagine people have still got black and white TVs. Because that's black and white.
There are people.
Yeah, but black and white is analog. There's no. You can't really get.
Yeah, it's black and white. Is a particular. With the way that the old analog TVs worked,
I thought the analog signal,
the color inserts there, but the main signal was still black and white, and that's just not how TV works nowadays.
Yeah, but I thought analog signals have been turned off. It's all digital now. I thought that was a big turn off. So that's I know you can get desktop boxes, but whether they're compatible with old black and white tellies, if you're going to buy a desktop box, which is probably the price of a telly anyway, you would have thought that's the end of black and white television. So it would surprise me greatly if anybody has a black and white television. But anyway,
there you go.
Well, that really does surprise me. Anyway, right. So I just wanted to summarise what I thought of the story. Loved it. Okay, because I was going off and talking about Star Trek Beyond, which I thought was great as well.
We finished talking about how we liked it already.
Yeah, we've done our bit.
You don't get to know.
So can I talk a little bit about Star Trek Beyond then? Have you seen Star Trek Beyond, by the way?
Oh, yes.
Isn't it? Really good. And there was a lot of beautiful little homages to Leonard Nimoy and, of course, the Anton, the actor that played Chekhov, dying. So it was a lovely little tribute to them right at the end of the film as well. And, I thoroughly enjoyed it. It was obviously seeing the Enterprise get destroyed wasn't a major impact because we knew that, obviously, there's going to be an Enterprise A, B, C or whatever. So that wasn't... a disaster, but what I thought was quite interesting about the story is they said that they were 3 years into the 5-year mission, which is more or less where we left the original series, and obviously they brought it back for the motion picture, so there was a gap that was explained. I know this is a different universe, but it was interesting to see Kirk thinking about being an admiral and Spock thinking about going into being an ambassador, because obviously Ambassador Spock dies, etc., etc. So the character developments, apart from the chemistry between Uhura and Spock, which is a bit weird, and also the fact that Spock started grizzling at one point, which again was a bit weird. But on the whole, fab film, really, really good.
In 2009, there were 28,000 black and white licenses still. They still don't understand why. How that's working with the changeover to digital. Because
the analog signal was still going in 2009, that's why.
It was? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I only turned it off a couple of years ago. Anyway,
This is the, I'm reading a web page on tvlicensing.co.uk. See, to me, it's this whole...
Oh, God. Bit. That's not the best timing to go...
Got your wobble bit there, Kirby.
What?
You wobbled a bit there.
No, you went off. You muted yourself. Or...
Am I here now?
Yeah, but you just disappeared for a couple of seconds. Okay, so we move on to feedback.
I transported myself to a different room, I guess.
Oh.
I'm a mind of evil.
Shall we move on to feedback?
Beep.
Right, now I was just wondering before we move too far ahead in the feedback section whether Andy would be interested in attempting Alan T. Butcher feedback reading.
Do you want to send it over?
I'll send it over. Just bear with me while you're digesting it a little bit. I'll go through the other bits of feedback. But meanwhile, I need to send it to you first. This is Slick. What's your name again? Andrew Money. Sorry, I know I like to wind you up by saying that. Right, here it comes. It's coming over via Facebook Messenger at With You Now, but we're going to move on.
Okay, let me see if I can find it.
Don't
okay,
read it now, because that'll be later. Ding. Yeah, you got it, have you? Okay. Jeff Waddle says, I've now got jobs early in the morning and the evening that allow me to watch TV in the afternoon. For the last few weeks, I've been watching Just Good Friends, which was a huge hit in the UK in the 1980s. And I'm watching Jan Francis's father in this. She's a real stunner. She was. And can't remember why I recognise him. Well, you can, because he's in the Aztecs. It's only later I found out that it's John Ringham who plays Plotzel in the Aztecs. He's also in Colony in Space coming up soon, where he plays Ellen Worth's father. But he's also, cool. I think he's in three Doctor Who stories in total. But we look forward to that one. So thank you, Jeff. What else we got here? Oh, I think it might be an audio. Let's try this and see what happens.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcasters. This is Paul Gobert with my review for the Pandora Machine. I'm not a huge fan of this one. It's fine. The acting's good. The story's enjoyable. But I think because it follows a nice tight four-parter, this one ends up feeling a bit dragged out. It's a shame because a bit of tightening it up and this could have been a great story. That's all I've got to say on this, really. Catch you next time.
Thank you, Paul. I think you might have sat on your microphone halfway through that bit of audio.
Yeah. I was about to say, what happened there? Was it me or...?
No, it wasn't you for once, Kirby. Right, so next bit of feedback.
Anything with Ian?
Ian?
Ooh. Ian Kirk, yeah.
There might be.
He has sent the transcript of it.
By Stop Don talking Horsen. Over the feedback. Here we go.
Okay, The Mind of Evil by Don Horton. What a fantastic, brilliant, epic story this really was. I loved it. It's been quite some time since I've seen this story. I'd say probably a good 30 years since I saw it all the way through last. So seeing it again was great, and it was a reminder to me as to why, in my opinion, and it's my opinion, that the classic series far outweighs that of the contemporary series. And if you like the contemporary series, that's great stuff too. Okay. For a four or six parter, it wasn't padded out.
Stop clapping your ears.
Sorry.
And that definitely is the one and only Billy.
Shut up, magic. Magic.
Too bad we couldn't hear the last bit of it.
Shut up.
Yeah.
Why am I so excited?
Because it's you.
I'm so excited. And I just
got okay. Right, to explain to listeners what happened there was the doorbell rang and one of Deb's customers arrived right in the middle of Billy's feedback. So what we're going to do, sorry about this, Billy, we're going to play your feedback from the beginning.
Okay, The Mind of Evil by Don Horton. What a fantastic, brilliant, epic story this really was. I loved it. It's been quite some time since I've seen this story. I'd say probably a good 30 years since I saw it all the way through last. So seeing it again was great, and it was a reminder to me as to why, in my opinion, and it's my opinion, that the classic series far outweighs that of the contemporary series. And if you like the contemporary series, that's great stuff too. Okay. But I thought for a six-parter, it wasn't long-winded, it wasn't padded out. I didn't fall asleep. In fact, I was captivated all the way through. You got the entertainment value right from where go. Right from when the doctor walks into the prison where the killer machine's being presented, and the doctor's making it quite obvious that he's quite cynical about the or skeptical of the killer machine. He's being quite disruptive by muttering under his voice in typical doctor fashion, great stuff. Then you've got the prison riots, you've got the gunfights, you've got you've got the unit troops storming the prison itself. And you know, and what a brilliant plot with the concept of the mind parasite feeding off the negative impulses of the thought patterns of the prisoners, you know, and the master using that for his own evil objectives. Great stuff. I love this story, I really did. You know, probably when the 30-year anniversary special came out, the documentary, when Nicholas Corney was talking about the doctor's physiology and how an aspirin might kill him, I didn't realise that reference came from this story. I didn't know that. But now I do, there you go. Mm. Great stuff. I thought it was quite sad how Barham died. Was his name Barham? I can't remember. The dopey prisoner. Yeah, very sad.
Yeah, but brother named Bailey.
But all in all, I love this story, and I find it quite difficult to find a negative about it. I really do. This story was absolute epic. Great stuff. So next week we have the clause of access. The clause of access. The clause of access. Yeah.
Thank you, Billy.
That's it. And what a weird and wonderful story that is. But more about that later. Take care.
That new year, won't we?
Right. A couple of points from that particular feedback. It was padded out, Billy, because, as I explained earlier, if they took out all the fighting, or some of the fighting bits, they could have dropped an episode. I don't think they needed as much fighting, but that's just what they did during this particular era. They wanted these fighting scenes and action scenes, because this is what the Pertwee Doctor was, essentially. But for me, it did tend to create a bit of padding. Can you guys think of any other bits of padding in this story?
Well, we discussed some of it while you were out of the room.
Mm. Oh, did you? Well, not related to fighting.
One thing I mentioned was a lot of the preparation before the fighting.
Yeah.
Was a little excessive.
Yeah, scenes of convoys, inverted Connors. And stuff like that, but they were quite brief. I'm not one that didn't have a problem with those, but yeah. Anyway, thanks for your feedback, Billy. Keep it coming. Where's me priority jingle folder gone? Oh, there it is.
I don't know.
I went out of the priority jingle folder to play some links, didn't I? Okay, right. So therefore, I have to play this.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Ian Kirk. The Mind of Evil by Don Houghton. A crock-like orange meets porridge.
Norman Stanley Fletcher, you have pleaded guilty to the charges brought by this court, and it is now my duty to pass sentence.
The master must have found that ailing creature before the previous story.
Yes.
In which he was confined to Earth because the vital part of his TARDIS had been removed.
Mm. Good point.
Again, the doctor uses his Venusian karate. It could have been worse. He could have used Venusian karaoke. The prison is actually Dover Castle.
Yes, we know.
Jo Grant is vital to some of the plot points. She mentions they have a Keller machine and insists on keeping the process prisoner around. I don't think it's a good idea to blow up a missile, which is a nerve gas warhead. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian. And now we can have
He left that last sentence off of his transcript.
He did?
Yes.
So what was the last sentence on the transcript then?
She mentions that they have the Keller machine and insist on keeping the process prisoner around.
Okay.
So, and there was one more sentence.
Thank you. So, here we go. This is Andy Nunney attempting Alan T. Butcher.
Okay.
Don't butcher it.
I won't butcher it. A visit to the Stangmore Nick of Time. When you heard the name of the famous Alsatian politician Emil Keller, you probably assumed this story would be an allegorical rendering of the incessant dispute fought with dogged determination over the territorial mastery of Alsace-Lorraine, or, as the Germans would call it, Reichsland-Elsass-Lothringen. You would have been largely incorrect. The mind of evil is, of course, a closely studied continuation of the Doctor's journey, suffering a dissociative identity disorder. Once again, the Doctor's projected alter ego engaged in its agreeable and capricious agent, a mutually legal... Oh, blimey! Yeah, I got so far that I fell over the word.
You were doing so well.
Mucilaginous approbivore. This time, there is greater encouragement to the Doctor's self-confidence in the Martyr's early request to employ his preeminent adroitness to control the creature. The Doctor's shockingly precarious causation scenario is slightly ameliorated by his procurement as the master of this marvel, which ultimately provides an expedient expectation of the creature in the denouement. The inclusion of the prison and the struggle to control it is, of course, there to highlight the Doctor's own predicament. Barnum and his ultimate sacrifice is the Doctor facing his own tenet of pacifism, its advantages, and the concomitant consequence he must accept. We also learn that Lawrence Scar was not really strangled in 1911 by Sutek-dominated Brother Marcus, and somehow went on to have a successful medical career in Her Majesty's prison service some 60 years later.
He got younger.
70 years. All in all, The Mind of Evil is a more interesting story than Don Tappan's previous tale, Inferno. However, from a technical perspective, the now destruction development is inferior. In many ways, the Master is both its triumph and its discomfiture, with him once again falling foul of hubris in his choice of alien accomplice. This, however, is more credibly handled here than in most of the Master's annals. Delgado is, of course, an unalloyed delight as ever. Next up, the accents built up the nerve to visit the Earth and make a gold-plated offering of ocular ping-pong ball fitments. And those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Yes, well done, Andy.
Yeah, come on. Okay, Mr. B, how did I do?
Great.
Mr. Butcher, sorry.
my turn next time? Fine. Yeah. I'm up to the challenge.
Yeah. It's fun, that was. Alan, you owe me a pint next time I see you.
God, I've had a request to join the group come through. I suppose you've probably seen that one, Kirby?
No? No.
Okay. Someone called Billy?
No, somebody called Meg Giardina. So I'm just going to see, has she got any Doctor Who related posts on her Facebook page?
I suppose one of my cousins is actually on there.
It doesn't look like it so far. We've had a few of these random people that want to join the 20.
Yeah, we've been getting a lot of them lately.
Facebook group and not actually wanting to be interested in Doctor Who. So I don't really know what's going on there, because I don't think she's got any connections to Doctor Who whatsoever.
Let me see what I can find.
You don't have to, because I'm looking, and if I don't find something very quickly, that particular request is going to be blocked. So, if you've got somebody who's a friend who likes Doctor Who and wants to join the group, fair enough. Let me know that they actually like Doctor Who, and I'll add them in. But if they're people who have been added in a spam way...
She doesn't look like your normal spammer.
No, she doesn't.
Though.
That's the thing.
That's interesting.
It is interesting. Let
me take a look at one other place that you may not have.
Shall I keep it there?
No. Hang on for just a minute.
This is great audio. This is going to be thrilling podcasting.
But it is. It just shows people that we do take seriously the type of people we add to the group.
First of all, she apparently lives near Crawley, which means or Guildford.
Mm. Yeah.
So that.
Where about Dashley? I can't see this, obviously.
Why not?
Well, how do I get to see you?
You're not an admin, then.
No, I'm not.
Oh, good. Well, that was a good decision.
Yeah, she one of the groups that she's in is the Guildford Community Board.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And another group, Guildford Town Past and Present.
Mm. Oh, I'm going to
so,
that.
So
yeah.
She may be a real Doctor Who fan and just is not in any Doctor Who stuff yet.
Well, I'll keep her on pending, and I'll send her a message saying, are you a Doctor Who fan?
Yes.
I'll do that now. Hi, May. Hi, May. That sounds like a... sort of. Oh, I've just gone. I've typed it in wrong. Are you a. Whoops, that says an S. A Doctor Who fan?
Doctor!
There we go. Trouble is, she's got to accept my request to reply to the message, so I'll be interested to see what happens. So we'll leave that one bending for a little bit. And we'll move on to some sponsorship items, shall we?
Sure.
Lavazzi.co.uk had an offer.
Don't My know favorite of our sponsors.
Because I think Meninda posted an offer of 10% off items. Don't know if that offer's still running, but just in case it is. Go to lavazzi.co.uk, where you can buy not only Doctor Who cosplay items, essentially that's what they are. You can also get some Doctor Who merchandise, clothing, like scarves and what have you, Christmas hats and whatever. And also Star Trek things, or Sherlock things
Master,
even.
Master, what? Okay, I'm going to have to excuse myself for about 3 minutes.
Oh, good.
So I'll let you know when I'm back. So don't start the quiz without me.
It does say, actually, on their website, as seen on BBC One, Amazon.co.uk, our Tom Baker scarf appeared on BBC One's Christmas 2014 Ident. It also appeared on a trailer for Have I Got News For You, in which it was perfectly modelled by Paul Merton and Ian Hislop. So, yes, if you want a very accurate-looking Fourth Doctor scarf, then go to Lavazzi. We've got a viewer talking about Fourth Doctor scarves. If you're actually watching, there's only one person watching, but might then watch the recording of this, it will be posted on the thing. Here's my Series 19 scarf, which I love very much, which of course you can also get from Lavazzi. Right, moving on to Who Won. Who are
whowon.co.uk
are resident sponsors from day one. They've been supporting us, so thank you very much, Who Won. Coming soon items, which we really need to get a move on and get them out for Christmas. The Revelli Conspiracy. These are big finished productions on CD, by the way. Sontarans. Ooh, sounds interesting. That's a First Doctor story. I didn't think the First Doctor had met Sontarans. Absolute Power. That's a Sixth Doctor story. Cold Fusion, which is a... doesn't actually show it. So it looks like a multi-doctor story, actually, judging by the picture. I might have to click on that one. Yeah, we've got the 5th and 7th Doctors on the cover. And it looks like Adric's on there as well. Cool. That sounds quite interesting, doesn't it, Andy?
It does indeed.
Among other items, coming soon to whowon.co.uk. Latest products, bearing in mind, Christmas is coming. The books Crusaders by David Whittaker. Daleks, also by David Whittaker, although the website says David Whittaker, or Whittaker. And the Doctor Who magazine 506 with Patrick Troughton on the cover. And Space Pirates, the CD audio book by Terence Dix. So, whowon.co.uk to get your Doctor Who goodies to obviously give out to your loved ones that love Doctor Who. I suppose we should really have a little glance at news, because we're getting quite close to our new episode of Doctor Who, and hopefully we might be getting even closer to an announcement of the new series. Now, what I think they're going to do is, when the Christmas special finishes, I think they're going to do a montage of the forthcoming series, and we might even get a coming soon in whenever at the end of that. So keep fingers crossed for that one. Paul McGann.
I'm front and sides.
Paul McGann to star in Brothers Project.
Oh, we're already to that.
Eighth Doctor.
Did we talk it?
No,
did
I'm
we
doing talk it in about, reverse. I'm doing it in reverse.
Whowon.co.uk.
Yeah, we've done that and Lavazzi.
Pay attention. Yeah, Eighth Doctor Paul McGann has teamed up with his brother, writer Mark McGann, to embark on a short film project based on Elizabeth Barrett Browning's poem Perplexed Music. So there you go. Whotopia 30. The latest issue of fan magazine Whotopia has been released and is now available to download from the Whotopia website, and it has a conversation with Peter Davison on it as the highlight. Mini heritage plaque for John Pertwee up for auction. Back in October, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society unveiled a blue heritage plaque at what?
Dwas.
It says here, Doctor Who Appreciation Society.
Yes, Dwas.
Shut up.
EWAS, Dwas.
At Wimbledon. It says it at New Wimbledon Theatre. I think that should say New Wimbledon Theatre in London, in honour of the third Doctor, John Pertwee. The Society has now produced 25 miniature versions, which are available to purchase from their website, but have also put a special one up for auction which includes signatures from many of the guests who attended the event. Now, I reckon they should have a blue plaque at Medina Theatre, because that's where I was lucky enough to meet John Pertwee shortly before he died. And that video is on the 20 megabyte YouTube page.
And you ought to post a link to it again.
Should I?
Yes.
You do make things awkward for me. You know that, don't you?
I can post the link to it when I get home from work.
Can you now? Even though I
can do it. Too much trouble.
Yeah, if it's too much trouble.
For you. I really enjoy that watching that. It's interesting to see a young you.
Thank you.
Right,
I'm trying to find my video.
With hair, yes, with hair.
We're there, what are you on about? What do you mean?
You.
We're there.
With hair.
Oh, with hair. I thought you said we're there. I thought, what is he talking about? Okay, I'll see if I can find this video that you mentioned.
No, find it later, because remember, no. I'm running out of time.
Well, it doesn't matter about running out of time, because we're coming to the end of the show. Right.
Oh, what? No quiz?
No. No point in doing it between you and Andy, because you'd win. What's the point in that?
But that's actually suit me, because we've got to go out and choose carpet soon. So She Who Must Be Obeyed is going to drag me out.
Excuse me, She Who Must Be Obeyed is in the other room, I'm afraid. So
all right, the mainland version of She Who Must Be Obeyed. not the offshore version.
Yes. I'm sure.
I have a She Who Must Be Obeyed as well.
Do you now?
Yes.
Wow.
You're across the pond version, aren't you?
Yes.
Anyway, right. The show is coming to an end. We've got to talk briefly about the next episode, which will be just after Christmas. I haven't quite got a date for it yet, and we'll be looking at the forthcoming Christmas special with that one.
27th, I can't do it.
And The Journey, I don't know when it is yet, Andy. The Journey will start up again with Claus Vaxos in the new year. Again, a date to be confirmed.
And that'll be interesting, because it's the last time we spoke about that one was August 28th, 2012.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Can't quite understand why I can't find my John Pertwee.
And that was before I was making notes, so I don't have I'm going to have to make some notes on it.
Okay. But look out on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, where you will find the reposted link to my meeting with John Pertwee the month of his death, sadly enough. So that's one particular reason why it's so poignant. But as far as this episode of the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is concerned, thank you, Andy and Kirby, for bothering to turn up. And thank you, listeners, for downloading and listening
to
the show.
It takes burning my foot to not turn up.
And thank you, viewers, for watching it after it was recorded, because nobody's watching at the moment, so...
I'll watch it after it's recorded. I want to see what all the fuss was about when the dogs were barking.
I don't think Star was barking. It's only magic. Oh, Alan T. Butcher's back. Sorry, Alan. Dogs. We're just about to finish. Anyway, you missed Andy reading your feedback. You'll have to listen to the show. Anyway, all right. So, have a nice Christmas, because we won't see you until afterwards. So the Christmas special will be just after Christmas. Goodbye.
Merry Christmas.
Goodbye, goodbye, Fancy Pants.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV services production sponsored by whoone.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.